with your stomach, but you're not fasting with your eyes. What does fasting of the eyes mean? It means that you're going to refrain from looking at those things which are haram for you to look at.
Exactly.
Fasting of the hands, you're going to stop yourself from taking that which does not belong to you. Fasting of the feet, you're not going to walk towards that which Allah would be displeased by. So all of these play a role in fasting itself.
So what happens to me that I do the fasting and yet I lie?
Mm-hmm.
What happens to me? What are the reasons? I want to know the reasons behind that.
Well, why would we lie in any place? Lying is a huge sin.
No, right? You know, because when we are fasting, we're going through a terrible, you know, I'm getting weaker, I don't eat, I don't drink.
Yeah,
all these
terribles
I take and still, I do horrible things.
I think a lot of it would come down to sincerity, just like Sister Siddiqa mentioned. If we're not sincerely doing it for the sake of Allah, one of the beautiful things about the month of Ramadan is it allows the monster to be revealed within us. That's what it really does.
Yeah.
When you're hungry, you're tired, that monster within will come out.
Exactly.
You know, we'll suddenly lash out, we'll get angry, and then we'll realize, I have this weakness. So part of the process is actually identifying the weaknesses that exist so that we're able to correct those things within us.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Give us some recommendations, some advices on how to be sincere as well as fasting.
First, for every action that we do, have an intention. Who am I really doing it for? And this comes down to digging very deep within the soul. There might be people who fast the mustahab fasts before the month of Ramadan. And that's where it actually becomes very clearer, because in the month of Ramadan, it is wajib to fast. It is obligatory to fast. One doesn't really have much of a choice there, unless, of course, different other laws apply to them, which allow them to refrain from fasting. For every action that we do, when we start making an intention or understanding who we're doing it for, it starts to become clearer for us where our loyalty lies. Does it lie with Allah, or does it lie with the fame and the respect that we get from other people?
So at first, we have to notice the intention.
You know, in the month of Ramadan, in some countries, there's iftar for the whole 30 nights, sitting with other people, serving in the different Husayniyas, in the different mosques.
Yes, they come together.
Who am I serving other people with food for? Is it for Allah, or is it so that I can get a bit more fame? Am I going to feed another person so that I can be praised for my charitable acts, or am I going to do it solely for the sake of Allah?
They call him or her a very generous person.
Yes, so it comes down to digging very deep within the soul, and that's the first step. And once that step is done, then we can see where our vices lie, where our problems are. Then we can start to correct ourselves. Because if I don't know where my problems are or what issues I have within my soul, I'm never going to be able to correct them.
So the intention and considering the satisfaction of God. Now, aside from that, brother, I would like you to tell us how to chain the monster inside.
Chaining the monster inside.
Because I know some people, and I've heard about it, that they do some wrong things during the year, but when it comes to the holy month, they stop doing that. Now, it's bad. I know it's a bad habit, but still they have a respect for that month.
Even that is, you know, it's better than nothing.
Exactly.
The idea
it's an improvement.
The improvements that we make in the month of Ramadan, we're supposed to continue them. But the point I was making was that, look, sister, what are you? What are you composed of? You, as a person, what constitutes you? So if we go to the subject of akhlaq itself, the mystics talk about four faculties which actually create us, right? The first is intellect. The second is wahm, or the imagination. The third is ghadab, or anger. And the fourth is shahwa, desire, right? These four faculties are what constitute a human being. Now, when you think of intellect, you understand that this is a good thing, right? And the intellect is supposed to be in charge of the other three faculties, right?
Yes.
But then when you think of the other ones, imagination, you think of anger, you think of shahwa, desire, you think that they're really bad things. Why would Allah inherently create something evil within us that we have to chain up? That's not the idea of Islam. Rather, we're supposed to give direction to the other faculties. If the intellect is in charge of the other faculties within us, it will always direct the other faculties to doing those good things. For example, imagination, right? Mm-hmm. If you try and chain the imagination, it's not going to work. Imam Khomeini describes it as almost like a bird, which is jumping from one branch to another. It's always jumping. It's a fleeting imagination. They'll go into fantasies.
You must
start
give it
thinking
a direction.
About things which are haram. The imagination can be used for extraordinary things.
Exactly.
Imagining Jannah. The Waham is described as the eyes of the heart. Things that you haven't seen, you haven't witnessed, and yet you're supposed to bring Iman on them. The angels. Have you ever seen an angel? Maybe you have, but do you really know what they look like? No. You have to use the imagination to reach those things. The same with hell and the same with Barzakh, the afterlife general. Okay, what about anger? Are you supposed to chain the anger and never let it out? No. As a Muslim, you're supposed to let anger out in a controlled manner against injustice, for example, whatever shape and form that injustice takes. Your boss is trampling all over you. I'm going to chain my anger. I'm never going to get angry. And you convince yourself that that's the right thing to do. No, it's not. If injustice is taking place, you're supposed to express anger in a controlled manner. If you don't, then those people are going to continue to commit injustice against you and against other people, right? And the same with shahwa, desire. If you have no desire, you're not going to open your fast at the end of the day. And you are going to die from starvation.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes, that's
shahwa,
true.
Shahwa, we think about it in a completely negative way. Actually, it's something that we are inbuilt with, which helps us to nourish ourselves. The problem occurs when the intellect is not on top of it.
It goes out of control.
It goes out of control. Mm-hmm. Now you've just become obese. Now you've just become addicted to a video game, which you're supposed to enjoy. Now you're not even enjoying it. You're just scrolling on your phone, getting those dopamine shots over and over and over again. You're not even enjoying it anymore. Hello? You're not even enjoying it. You're just addicted.
Exactly. Right? You're just addicted. So right now, let's go for a little break and we'll be back after just a short interval. Thank you for listening, guys.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
So we were discussing how to be looking good inside and outside.
Allah has actually given us a roadmap to enjoy life. There was a celebrity, right? Working out is really difficult, right? When you go to exercise and you're lifting those weights, you hate it.
It is
very difficult. You actually
hate
it, right?
Yes.
It's horrible. I saw this celebrity in the West. I don't want to mention his name, but he said, when I push weights, he's a bodybuilder, when I push weights, I get the most enjoyment more than anything else in the world.
Though it is very difficult.
We were supposed to train ourselves, train our shahwa, our desire, to enjoy those things which Allah's pleasure is to be found. And this is how the mystics actually enjoy the salah. They enjoy it. Yeah. They love praying.
So they grow a desire in themselves in which this process of purification and growing turns out to be an interesting thing.
It's a beautiful thing. It's something that we enjoy. What's the opposite of desire? Disgust, right? Desire attracts you.
Yes.
Disgust, you know, it repels you. The Ahlul Bayt, when they were questioned, how can you be ma'asum? How can you avoid all sins? They pointed to something disgusting, a carcass which had maggots and flies all over it. And they said, would you eat this? And the guy said, hell no, that's disgusting. He said, sins appear like this to us.
They see the true nature of those things.
Right. And so when we allow the intellect to actually govern the shahwa, we'll start to see things in the way that Allah wants us to see them. Right. And so sins will appear disgusting to
us. Exactly.
And evil deeds, they'll appear disgusting to us. But good deeds, those things which Allah's pleasure is in, we'll start to see those things as enjoyable and we'll be entertained and love them.
So we have to nurture ourselves and work on ourselves more and more and then have have a direction in our path.
Exactly. So coming back to the idea of chaining the monster within, mm-hmm. that's not the outlook of Islam. We're not supposed to chain it per se. Mm-hmm. And this makes it appear very difficult and something very strenuous.
Yes.
And something that, you know,
sentence has a very hard connotation.
No.
You feel like it's very huge and massive.
As Muslims, Islam is actually teaching us to be like water. Right. And it's just about directing the water
exactly.
in the right way.
Controlling the way.
But if you try and build a dam and stop the water from flowing, mm-hmm. you'll become dry. You'll become dead. And that's why there's so many people who embark on what apparently seems to be the mm-hmm. spiritual journey. When you talk to them, though, they appear like dead people. Right. They're just like planks of wood.
Exactly.
Like, man, where is your personality? Mm-hmm. Where is you never get angry? What do you mean you never get angry?
Well, perhaps you're not alive.
You never have desire?
Yes.
Ahlul Bayt had desire. Ahlul Bayt had anger.
The thing is to control them. The thing is to give them direction.
Ahsant, yeah. mm-hmm.
If we're fasting, we do that for the intention that God starts to be satisfied with us. With this intention comes the responsibility to control our desires and go in a way that will lead us to a good destination. This was all the time we had for today's episode. Until another session, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي let the ummah rise again let us see daylight again once again
Yusuf Jalali Tehran
Rubashavit Gaza
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The French presidential election is being described as a populist bloc of Marine Le Pen versus an elitist bloc of Emmanuel Macron, but many don't seem to want to join either group. The first round's third-place finisher held an internal poll. Almost 70% of his leftist supporters will either abstain or submit blank ballots rather than vote for either candidate. France's Muslims don't see a choice which isn't Islamophobic. Macron continues to support bashing Islamo-leftism, while Le Pen has an on-again, off-again plan to give fines for wearing the hijab in public. The student class isn't taking sides either. They recently blocked universities over what they say are two bad candidates.
The elder class may provide the key vote. Back when he expected an easy victory, Macron promised to raise the retirement age to 65. Now he's backtracking in an effort to win over left-wing voters, but many aren't sure what his true plans really are.
Le bilan d'Emmanuel Macron n'est pas forcément positif.
Macron's record isn't very positive. Long-term unemployment, economic instability, the destabilizing effects of the yellow vests. People have many different reasons for being disappointed with him.
In 2017, the two mainstream parties were swept out of power, but the repeat second-round matchup has many voters upset that new ideas remain absent.
La ligne conservatrice réactionnaire.
The conservative and reactionary line is championed by Le Pen, but she's very divisive. Many of her electorate preferred Eric Zemmour in the first round. And then there are many mainstream conservatives who will never vote for her or the national rally. The key traits of this vote are bitter abstention and bored indecisiveness.
Most polls show Macron leading by around 6 to 8 points. But that's within the margin of error, and Western polls have consistently undercounted the right nationalist candidate. The runoff is on April 24th. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
There are many security experts who claim the expansion of NATO in recent years close to Russia's borders and provocative military exercises are factors that brought about the conflict in Ukraine. Now EU members Finland and Sweden are poised to announce they want to join NATO. One analyst has been giving us his reaction via broadband.
That's a very serious escalation toward Russia, because this is when the United States will put nuclear bombs in Finland, and that would mean a direct escalation that Russia will not accept.
Finland shares a border with Russia that is more than 1,300 kilometres long. Moscow points out that if this country was to join the 30-nation alliance, NATO's land border with the Russian Federation would more than double in length. A new opinion poll by Le Soir newspaper has found that 90% of citizens surveyed in Belgium said the war worries them, but that they do not support direct military intervention over concerns that it could trigger a new world war. A quarter of those questioned said the West's supply of weapons to fighters in Ukraine is, quote, a bad thing. We have also been asking members of the public about this.
Yeah, I think we should stop doing that, huh? Because war... fights war and then ends up in more war. So it's more about like discussing, talking.
It's a very good thing to have a dialogue with Russians and hopefully sort this out without war.
Ideally, diplomacy is the way that this comes to an end, but it takes two sides. From what I'm reading, they don't want to negotiate at all yet.
On Tuesday, the European Commission defended the decisions taken by EU governments to send arms to Ukraine.
In this case, more weapons doesn't mean more war. More weapons for Ukraine means more ability for the Ukrainian army to defend its people.
As concerns over possible escalation continue to increase, Finland and Sweden are expected to announce, before the end of this month, if they intend to join NATO. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
People in the west of Afghan capital Kabul were once again terrified after three explosions hit an educational center and a high school, leaving dozens of people dead and injured. Soon after the attack, we rushed Abdulrahim Shahid High School to talk with eyewitnesses.
After the first explosion, I arrived at the scene. Then suddenly the next blast hit the school alley. I saw dozens of students fall on the ground. People started to take the dead and wounded to hospital.
The targeted school is located in Hazaraz residential area, where the community has been bearing the brunt of blind terror attacks. People are now calling on the Taliban to tighten the security and protect all Afghans.
I call on the Taliban to tighten security across our country and protect those at risk. My sister and her children are living here. They are horrified. I don't want this situation to continue. Besides, we can't dare to send our children to educational centers. When will poor Hazaras live in peace? They have long been falling victim to terrorism.
The Taliban, on the other hand, claim that they won't let such attacks repeat in the future, vowing to bring the orchestrators to justice.
First of all, we extend our sympathy to the families of the victims. Secondly, our intelligence and security forces are investigating the incident and will hold those who martyred our innocent citizens accountable. I promise our Hazara brothers that we will take urgent steps to protect them against our common enemy. We will also pay major attention to the security of their public places.
Last year, at least 58 people were killed and more than 100 injured in a bomb attack in a girls' school in the same Shia neighborhood in Kabul. In recent years, suicide attacks in western Kabul have taken the lives of hundreds of civilians, including students. People here say they're exhausted by growing violence and terrorism. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
In a Twitter post, the head of Yemen's national negotiating delegation, Mohammed Abdus Salam, said since the entry of the UN brokered truce, the Saudi-led coalition has prevented flights from reaching the Sana'a International Airport and obstructed the entry of fuel ships to the port of Hodeidah.
We have entered the third week of the truce while Sana'a Airport has not been opened yet, as it was supposed. Unfortunately, no commercial flight has arrived, even though the airport is technically ready. We do not know what are the reasons that prevent the opening of the airport until now, but what we do know is that the Saudi-led coalition has not adhered to any agreements since the start of its war on our country in 2015.
Observers say the Saudi violations are threatening the UN brokered agreement which is supposed to build for a comprehensive political solution. They are calling on the United Nations to intervene and open Sana'a Airport. In the beginning of April, the UN envoy for Yemen, Hans Grundberg, announced a two-month truce. The agreement includes opening Sana'a Airport for two flights per week and allowing Yemen's fuel ships to arrive at Hodeidah Port. For 7 years of war and siege, the United Nations has always been providing the political cover-up for Saudi Arabia's violations of international law. But now that it has brokered an agreement, it should take real measures to force Riyadh to do its part of the truce and open Sana'a Airport. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Dozens of people gathered in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, to mark Palestinian Prisoners' Day. A day when resistance factions and their supporters stand in solidarity with Palestinian prisoners held in Israeli jails.
On this day, which marks the Day of Palestinian Prisoners, I am certain that the people of the Arab and Muslim worlds, as we see in this gathering, will show the true unity with the resistance and the path of the resistance, especially with the issue of the prisoners and Al-Quds, which are the emblem of the Palestinian struggle.
Hezbollah Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qassem stressed that one cannot be truly with Palestine if they are not with the resistance.
It has become clear that whoever is with Palestine should be with the resistance. Anyone who has declared that he is with Palestine but hasn't taken one practical step in supporting the resistance is not truly with Palestine. Military resistance comes first. The other forms of resistance back and help to serve the actual resistance with arms.
He recalled that after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran, late Imam Khomeini took the decision to close the Israeli embassy and reinstate the Palestinian embassy before declaring he was with Palestine. Liberating Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails has become a struggle for all resistance factions as it is linked directly to the Palestinian cause. They stress that liberating prisoners can only be realized completely by liberating Palestine. Officials of Palestinian resistance groups Hamas and Islamic Jihad considered that history has proven that only armed struggle can be a path to liberating both Al-Quds and the prisoners who continue to suffer from Israel's aggressive policies. More than 4,400 Palestinian prisoners are currently held in Israeli jails. Minors and women are among 500 detainees under the so-called administrative detention policy, under which they are held without charge or trial for an indefinite time period. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Italians have slammed Israel's continued pursuit of repressive, violent practices against Palestinians following the killing of several Muslims, including a teenage boy, by Israeli security forces at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, a major holy site in Al-Quds, last week. Tensions between Israelis and Palestinians have been running high over the past weeks, with Israeli forces carrying out numerous raids in the West Bank, which led to the deaths of a number of Palestinians. The latest round of violence by Israel on Monday saw its soldiers forcing their way into the Al-Aqsa Mosque and removing worshippers from its courtyards in order to allow settlers to exclusively mark the Passover holiday into the compound.
Once again, during Ramadan, a new aggression against Palestinians by the Israeli regime. This time they caught off guard men, women and children who were praying at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This again has shown the nature of the Israeli regime and the complacence of the international community.
Last year, during Ramadan, similar violence broke out, sparking the biggest conflict in years between Palestinian resistance movements and Israel, an 11-day war which only ended following intervention by international mediators.
The violence against Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds came at a particularly sensitive time. Ramadan this year coincided with the Christian Holy Week, which ends today, Monday, the second day of Eastertide. Catholic faithful have strongly condemned the latest killing of Palestinians by Israeli security forces.
For the umpteenth time, it is a provocation by Israel. This action were just a fresh provocation. There is a lack of respect for others' beliefs. During Easter time and Ramadan, we have to be more thoughtful.
Tensions. There are due exclusively to Israeli occupation policy. However, the international community seems to have lost interest in the conflict. By not taking any side, the Italian government is supporting Israel in practical terms.
Last meeting between Italian and Palestinian authorities took place in December when Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki met his Italian counterpart Luigi Di Maio on the sidelines of the 7th edition of the Rome MED Dialogues Conference. Other than reiterating Italy's traditional support for the Palestinian Authority, Di Maio reaffirmed Italy's commitment to a just, sustainable and negotiated two-state solution between Palestine and Israel as the key to stability and prosperity in the enlarged Mediterranean. Max Civili, Rome.
People in the port city of Karachi hit the streets to voice their outrage at the ouster of the elected government. The protesters say the U.S. conspired against their country. While Imran Khan never sought sore ties with any nation during his short-lived premiership,
former Prime Minister Imran Khan has accused Biden administration in Washington for toppling his government in Pakistan, for not towing U.S.'s line on foreign policy.
Khan said that his life is in danger, but he prioritizes Pakistan's independence over his life.
Imran Khan had twice tweeted, or in fact more, but he had a clear message for the U.S. administration that we are partners in peace. We will always be partners in peace. We are partners in trade. We'll always be partners in trade with the whole world, with everybody. But we will not take dictation from anybody.
I'm here specifically to do my part in wanting and executing the Pakistan that we all want. And I think Imran Khan represents a vision of that Pakistan. And I personally, honestly think it's not his job alone to do this. It's our job, our responsibility to come out and do this for ourselves. That's why I'm here.
We've gathered here because of the sovereignty of Pakistan, and we want Pakistan to get justice and Imran Khan to get justice, and we don't believe in the fake government.
Khan says U.S. diplomats started meeting some Pakistani officials 4 months ago, adding that Pakistan's ambassador to the U.S. was threatened.
We've gathered here to fight for a more democratic Pakistan, to fight for a free and independent Pakistan, to fight for a Pakistan that doesn't get bullied. That is our main reason for being here, for standing up for Pakistan, its sovereignty, and its integrity.
We are just here to support Imran Khan in this freedom fight. We are here to just, we don't accept the imported government. We are here to support our Prime Minister Imran Khan. He came here with the elected votes, our votes.
It's a protest for democracy. It's a protest for justice and for rights and human rights. The world, people choose their own leaders. Every citizen has a choice, has a right to choose their own people who they want to govern over them.
Khan has called for a snap election and urged an investigation into what he calls the U.S.'s plot to topple his government. He has become the first Pakistani prime minister to be removed from office through a non-confidence vote by the parliament. Mohammad Turi, Karachi.
Palestinians rallied in the besieged Gaza Strip on Sunday to mark the 48th anniversary of Palestinian Prisoners' Day. Palestinian Prisoners' Day commemorates the first Palestinian prisoner exchange deal with Tel Aviv in 1974. Statistics show that Israeli forces have arrested nearly 1 million Palestinians since 1967. The rally was organized by all Palestinian factions who came together to express their solidarity with the prisoners in Israeli jails.
On Palestinians' Prisoners' Day, we call on all international organizations, especially the Red Cross, to fulfill their obligations towards Palestinian prisoners. The Red Cross has failed to protect Palestinian prisoners and has remained silent while Palestinian prisoners continue to suffer inside Zionist jails.
Israel currently holds around 5,000 Palestinians in its prisons and detention centers, including women and minors. Protesters shouted slogans against Israel and expressed their unwavering support for the prisoners.
For us, every day is a prisoner's day because Palestinian prisoners are our heroes and they live in our hearts and minds. We pray for them, especially during this holy month of Ramadan, to remain strong in the face of their Zionist captors.
Palestinian prisoners have gone on hunger strike several times in recent years to draw attention to their plight. Activists called on Palestinian armed wings to capture more Israeli soldiers in order to swap them with Palestinian prisoners.
Only capturing more Israeli soldiers can bring about the liberation of Palestinian prisoners. Armed resistance is the best option to help secure the release of the prisoners because our enemies only understand the language of force.
According to prisoners' advocacy groups, Palestinian prisoners continue to face a wide range of human rights violations in Israeli jails and detention centers.
As they mark Palestinian Prisoner Day, people here accuse the international community of turning a blind eye to the continued Israeli crimes against thousands of Palestinian prisoners. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The French presidential election was trending as an easy victory for the incumbent, Emmanuel Macron, until the unrest in Ukraine began. Macron's insistence on long-term sanctions for Russia exploded already high inflation. That's resulted in widespread hardship, resentment, and tough assessments of Macron's economic record.
It's clear that Macron has not improved the quality of life for the French. He's not responsible for all the problems he's had to deal with, but it's clear there's a big difference between what he's promised and what he's delivered.
The French election may come down to this. Who do voters feel will protect the average person from the economically explosive effect of long-term sanctions on Russia over the unrest in the Ukraine? It's not a question the mainstream media wants to discuss, but it is top of mind for the average person. Polls show the race is now a dead heat, with a soaring Marine Le Pen of the National Rally taking an opposite tack, promising to oppose Russia energy sanctions, which are wreaking havoc with gas, heating, and food prices. As the challenger, Le Pen doesn't have a record to defend, and she's escaping anger over the economic crisis.
Macron has absolutely not done a good job on protecting our purchasing power. The middle class feels that Macron has contempt for the middle class, and they also feel a great contempt for the neoliberal globalist banker Macron.
Macron's far-right economic policies provoked the unprecedented yellow vest protests in 2018. He only made minor concessions before turning to brutal repression. And the coronavirus crisis only aggravated economic inequalities.
Macron needed to go much further in his efforts to reduce prices. It's unbearable to go to the supermarket these days. Even people who make an honest salary say that they are having trouble.
Abstention may reach record highs because many voters wonder if Le Pen would actually deliver on her populist economic promises. Her party has historically been aligned with neoliberalism as well. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight.
Even before hostilities broke out, the CEOs of U.S. major weapons firms were talking about how tensions in Europe could pad their profits. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written jointly by William Harting and Julia Gelidil, political analysts. This article is published under the heading Pentagon Contractors Seizing New Gold Rush to Cash In on Russia-Ukraine Crisis. Stay tuned, please, for the first part of this article. Even before hostilities broke out, the CEOs of major U.S. weapons firms were talking about how tensions in Europe could pad their profits. In a January 2022 call with his company's investors, Raytheon Technologies CEO Greg Hayes typically bragged that the prospect of conflict in Eastern Europe and other global hotspots would be good for business, adding that we're seeing, I would say, opportunities for international sales. The tensions in Eastern Europe, the tensions in South China Sea, all of those things are putting pressure on some of the defense spending over there. So, I fully expect we are going to see some benefit from it, unquote. In late March, in an interview with the Harvard Business Review after the Russia-Ukraine tension had begun, Hayes defended the way his company would profit from that conflict. So, I make no apology for that. I think, again, recognizing we are there to defend democracy, and the fact is, eventually we will see some benefit in business over time. Everything that's being shipped into Ukraine today, of course, is coming out of stockpiles, either at DOD, the Department of Defense, or from our NATO allies, and that's all great news. Eventually, we will have to replenish it, and we will see a benefit to the business over the next coming years, unquote. The Russia-Ukraine crisis will indeed be a bonanza for the likes of Raytheon and Lockheed Martin. First of all, there will be the contracts to resupply weapons like Raytheon's Stinger anti-aircraft missile and the Raytheon Lockheed Martin-produced Javelin anti-tank missile that Washington has already provided to Ukraine by the thousands. The bigger stream of profits, however, will come from assured post-conflict increases in national security spending in Europe and in the U.S. justified, at least in part, by the disasters that followed. Indeed, direct arms transfers to Ukraine already reflect only part of the extra money going to U.S. military contractors. This fiscal year alone, they are guaranteed to also reap significant benefits from the Pentagon's Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, that is USAI, and the State Department's Foreign Military Financing, that is FMF program, both of which finance the acquisition of American weaponry and other equipment, as well as military training. Since then, the United States regime has committed around $5 billion in security assistance to that country. According to the U.S. State Department, the United States has provided such military aid to, as they claim, help Ukraine preserve its territorial integrity, secure its borders, and improve interoperability with NATO. So, when Russian troops began to mass on the Ukrainian border last year, Washington quickly upped the ante. On March 31, 2021, the U.S.-European Command declared a potential imminent crisis, given the estimated 100,000 Russian troops already along that border and within Crimea. As last year ended, the Biden administration had committed $650 million in weaponry to Ukraine, including anti-aircraft and anti-armor equipment like the Raytheon Lockheed Martin Javelin anti-tank missile. Since then, according to Pentagon reports, the United States regime has committed to giving approximately $2.6 billion in military aid to that country, bringing the Biden administration total to more than $3.2 billion and is still rising. Some of this assistance was included in a March emergency spending package for Ukraine, which required the direct procurement of weapons from defense industry, including drones, laser-guided rocket systems, machine guns, ammunition, and other supplies. The major military industrial corporations will now seek Pentagon contracts to deliver that extra weaponry, even as they are gearing up to replenish Pentagon stocks already delivered to the Ukrainians. On that front, in fact, military contractors have much to look forward to. More than half of the Pentagon's $6.5 billion portion of the emergency spending package for Ukraine is designated simply to replenish Department of Defense inventories. In all, lawmakers allocated $3.5 billion to that effort, $1.75 billion more than the president even requested. They also boosted funding by $150 million for the U.S. State Department's FMF program for Ukraine. And keep in mind that those figures don't even include emergency financing for the Pentagon's acquisition and maintenance costs, which are guaranteed to provide more revenue streams for the major weapons makers. Better yet, from the viewpoint of such companies, there are many bites left to take from the apple of Ukrainian military aid. Another positive side effect of the war for Lockheed, Raytheon, and other arms merchants like them is the push by House Armed Services Committee Chair Adam Smith and Ranking Committee Republican Mike Rogers of Alabama to speed up production of a next-generation anti-aircraft missile to replace the Stinger. In his congressional confirmation hearing, William LaPlante, the latest nominee to head acquisition at the Pentagon, argued that America also needs more hot production lines for bombs, missiles, and drones. Consider that yet another benefit in waiting for the major weapons contractors.
He himself says that when I was invited to travel to Iran, I came to Iran, had a meeting with Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, and after that he decides to study about Islam.
So he was such a man, not only believing that I have found the right path, though I'm only going to commence on this path. Mm-hmm. So because of this, he presented two refugees, not only there, even for the camps, for the migrants who would refuge to Norway.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is The Teacher. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio for today's discussion are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahtavi and Sheikh Ziyaniya. Sheikh Mahtavi, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Ziyaniya, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
So the program, The Teacher, is about the life and works of the most outstanding Muslim philosophers, thinkers, jurists, and dignitaries all across the nation of Islam. And today we want to talk about a man who converted into religion of Islam. Of course, he is not, we can't say, a philosopher or a jurist. He is a physician, but he has been, we can't say, the source of benefit and source of endeavors a lot, especially in the occupied Palestine. He is no one but Dr. Trond Ali Lindstad. Okay, Sheikh Ziyaniya, let's start with you. What information do we have about the life of Trond Ali Lindstad?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dr. Trond Ali Lindstad is a physician, as you mentioned, who was born in 1942 in Oslo, in Norway. And he was born in a Christian family. His family was a practicing family in Christianity, and he believed in the teachings of Christianity deeply. He spent his youthhood in Norway and studied in medicine, and after that moved to England to complete his studies. And it's notable to know that during his younghood, because it was the age of Cold War, and the world was, you know, tending toward fighting against capitalism. The world was feeling that if you want to stand against capitalism, you have no way out but to resort to communism.
Okay.
So that's why he tended to be a communist at mm-hmm. the beginning of his, you know, young age. I mean, when he was 20, 25 okay. years old. And it's normal. Every person at yes. that time may have this, you know, mindset. After that, because he was, you know, against the idea of capitalism, and because of the propaganda of Israel, okay. he moved to Israel and even worked for some months in the farms that was belonged to Jews. But he says that according to the actions of Zionists yeah. there, I understood that the story is not correct and their behavior is different mm-hmm. from what I've been told before.
Okay.
So he got out from
Israel.
Israel.
Yes.
And after that, he works in the camps for Palestinian people.
The Palestinian refugees yes. in the camps. Yes.
So okay. he works as a physician, as, yes. as a doctor
yes.
in those camps and tries to help them and mm-hmm. to help the injuries to okay. To the people who okay. are injured as the you know result of the bombardment.
Yes.
And after the Islamic Revolution of Iran, he decides to convert into Islam. That okay. it has also a story that yes. inshallah we will.
Sheikh Mahtavi, do you know the story of his conversion to Islam?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Actually, this is what he announced publicly, that he has converted to Shia Islam, and it was specifically out of the effect or out of the impact of the revolution, and also because of the leadership of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi. Mm-hmm. So most of the time, as we had in our program also, we see people here and there all around the world, they may convert into Shia Islam, but they do not say it publicly. They may hide it because of some certain
problems that one
circumstances yes. they yes. are living in.
Okay.
So for a native Norwegian man to say it publicly, at least you have to pay the cost. And we see that Ali Lindstad,
yes,
he paid the cost. I think this is good to give these two titles to this noble man. When I was reading his biography, I was interested in these two titles as Father of the Refugees.
Okay.
This is one title. And another title, you may say, the victim of being anti-Zionist.
Mm-hmm.
Because two titles are fitting his lifestyle.
Yes.
Why the story goes like this, that because of his lifetime services to refugee here and there, cool, as my brother mentioned, at the border of Lebanon and Palestine, there are many refugee camps.
Yes.
So people who are actually fleeing from the Palestine because of the bombardment of Israel, they must be actually settled down in those places, or they must be given place in those camps. So they are in need of some services.
Of physicians, and especially those who are injured, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. And not every physician dares to go there.
Yo, yeah, man.
And we see he didn't only go there. He created a group of physicians.
Oh.
So he was such a man, not only believing that I have found the right path, so I'm only going to commence on this path. He said, okay, now let's establish a group.
Mm-hmm.
So because of this services, he presented the two refugees, not only there, even for the camps, for the migrants who would refuge to Norway, because Norway also is considered as one of those European countries who receive many migrants throughout the year because of all these wars that Western countries, they themselves established against Muslim countries.
Okay.
By the way, because of the services that he presented to these people, we see that Fifth Harald, actually from the royal family of Norway, he was forced to give the medal, but he couldn't continue insisting on this ceremony. I mean to give this medal of honor to him.
Okay.
Because of the Zionist pressure in the Norway.
Oh.
This is the reason why I'm saying that he was the victim of being anti-Zionist.
Oh.
So for the first of the story, I was trying to say that he is the father of refugees.
So the whole ceremony was cancelled? The whole ceremony was cancelled, huh? The medal was not
given. They took it back.
Oh.
They took it back.
Oh.
And it was a big scandal. And it was a big scandal for Norwegian royal family.
Yes.
And we see in the media, even public couldn't tolerate this withdrawal of the medal. And there are a lot of documentaries on it.
The Zionist lobbies, you know, are working here and there in every country. And everybody who's against them, you know, must be eliminated from the scene of the history. This is what the Zionists are doing. And the Zionist behavior is criticized by the Jews themselves too, those justice seekers who are after the Palestinians. You know, so many years they have occupied the lands, they killed the innocent children, women and men of the Palestine. And people like Trond Ali Lindstad are really great and brave, I think, to endanger their lives in order to go into the battle scenes, helping the refugees, especially the injured ones, and use their medicine. You know, he could have a very comfortable, cozy life in Norway, you know, in one of the hospitals at least, to be the head of the hospital. But he endangers his life, you know, risks his life and the life of his colleagues going over there. Sheikh Ziyariya, any other point about his life?
I want to highlight two points in his life. The first one is the one that you mentioned, the tireless personality of Dr. Trond Ali Lindstad.
Yes.
That he is questioned in an interview that, okay, why you left your life? You could be in a, you know, comfortable life.
Yes.
Welfare, and you know, you left all these behind you, and now you are living, you know, in camps between Lebanon and Palestine under the bombardment. Why you have chosen this way? He says that I'm a Muslim, and Islam orders us or asks us to dedicate your life to defend the poor people and to stand for defending the right. So that's why I'm doing my best to dedicate my life for this true message of Islam.
That's all right.
So That's why I'm calling him a tireless man.
Yes.
That who, you know, spent more than 40 years in this way up to now.
Yes.
And may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala increase his tawfiq in this way. Another important point is that the role of Quran in his life.
Okay.
And I want to emphasize on the role of guidance of Quran in the life of people. Mm-hmm. He himself says that when I was invited to travel to Iran, I came to Iran. He had a meeting with Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. And after that, he was fascinated by the personality, great personality of late Imam. And after that, he decides to study about Islam. That's why he refers to Quran. He studies Quran from the beginning up to the end.
Okay.
He thought, and again he decided to study. And for the third time, he studied the Holy Quran after the previous two times. After studying three times, he came to this point, okay, this is the true path. And he was that brave, as my dear brother Sheikh Mahdavi mentioned, he was that brave that he announced it publicly.
Okay.
And as he mentioned, Dr. Ali paid the price for this, you know, path, and that's why he was deprived from the Royal Medal of Norway. And that's, let me correct myself.
Yes,
at the beginning, I mentioned he was, he understood that Jews are different. No, he understood that Zionists are different with the propaganda that they are spreading all over the world. So he himself also emphasizes on this point that Zionists are equalizing themselves by Jews, but they are not the same.
Okay.
He says that, and we all know this, that Zionist is a political party that is, you know, oppressing people, but Jews are followers of a great religion, are followers of a great prophet, Prophet Moses. May God bless his soul. So they are different. And we have many Jews all over the world who are against Zionists in Israel.
And just look in what a tragic world we are living. Nowadays, recently, we have heard that some of the Arab countries are trying to establish a relation with Israel, you know, and they did that, okay? They officially announced that we consider Israel as an official land. They try to establish ties with the Israel country, and they do not see that how much the people are, we can say, under the disaster and the harm and the catastrophes that are taking place in the occupied Palestine. From the other one, a man from the Western world, from Norway, who converted to the religion of Islam, I think, and understood Islam better than so many of these so-called kings of the Arab countries in the Middle East, comes here, becomes the source of benefit and help for the Palestinian kids. Really, what a world we are living in, you know, and I think that this modification of the ties and establishing the ties with the Israel will get nowhere, especially for the Arab countries. The case is that, especially today, with the power of the media, the truth is known to the people. They know what atrocities and what cruelties these Israelis are doing in the occupied Palestine. Okay. Thank you much, Sheikh Ziaynia and Sheikh Mahdavi, for your nice elaboration regarding the life of Dr. Trond Ali Lindstad. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much to your listeners for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/in Call of Islam page. Also, YouTube channel, Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you. Fi amanallah.
A teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures. Oh Allah, we've shamed ourselves, we've strayed from Al-Mu'allim. Surely we've wronged ourselves, what will we say in front of him?